like to like now Mark Randall. The one goes out to Nugget and captures the tape. I specifically asked this gentleman to come to you because they have at least run twice and, or more, and they have both run active campaigns. So what I wanted to do is have each of them just chat for a few minutes about their experience for two or three minutes, and then we'll just take questions from the audience. So, please.
Hi. I'm Larissa Gastagnaga, and I'm also the Harold Staffen of Maryland. I actually run seven times, including the time when I didn't make it on the ballot, but I intended to run. There is, in fact, some handouts. There's a list of my runs. I excluded the run as lieutenant governor. That was really Spears' campaign, so this is what I've done. Okay. And, of course, you can always find me because I'm the guy who's last in the list. But also, to hand out this article from the city paper that appeared when I ran for city council the last time in 2011. City council president, thank you. And to me, that was my most satisfying, fulfilling run of all the ones I've done. And I was able, I got some good coverage. I was on the Dan Roderick show on WYPR, and it was good. And this particular article, I put it on here because it almost never happened. Because I almost put the kibosh on myself. Van Smith from the city paper, who had covered us many times, approached me and I told him, Van, I'm not going to do your interview because I don't like the way your editor treats me, and quite frankly, you know, I'm not doing it. You know, I work as a security officer. I'm a rent-a-pig, you know, and I'm very proud of it. I have great clients, but if you're going to only identify me as a security guard from Sedonia, I don't care if you identify me as the brain surgeon from Sedonia. I have views, I have issues that address the city, and unless your paper treats me accordingly, you know, I really don't want your interview at all. He went bananas. Tried to prove to me how fair he'd been over the years, and finally, you'll see, you can read the article, and I think it came out well, came out very well, probably better than others, even lengthier ones than he's done. Also, I have one curio here that I'd be glad to pass around so all of you can see it. I ran against Nick D'Adamo a couple of times. You can pass it around. And at one time when I did not run for city council against him, I decided to work for him because I always felt bad about running against Nick. When I considered all the damage-prone people in the city council, Nick was probably the least damage-prone person in the city council, and I felt bad about always running against him when I really wanted to run against other people that really deserved to be called names. You know, so one day on my birthday, I get in the mail this certificate, a proclamation from the city council wishing me a happy birthday. So, anyway, so that's what I have to show for all of this. Anyway, thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Davis.
I'm Rick Davis. I'm a dentist from the Eastern Shore. I joined the Libertarian Party in '92, and up until 2008, the only contact I really had with the state party was the newsletter. And one Sunday I came home from church and there was a message on my answering machine from Bob Johnson asking me to call him back. And well, it's probably a fundraising call, but I'll call him back anyway. And he said, we'd like you to run for Congress. I was kind of taken aback, but I thought about it. Well, I've always thought that if somebody asks you to run for Congress, you ought to do it. If you want to run for Congress, you probably don't belong there because you're going to be bad for the country. I've always kind of felt that the candidate should be dragged kicking and screaming to the job and allowed to go home after a term or two and after they've done their job, and maybe we'd be better off. The Eastern Shore is kind of an unusual place. Our state senator, since I've been there, has at least once introduced a bill in the legislature to arrange for the Eastern Shore to secede. course, it didn't get through the legislature, but they tried anyway. But Bob hit it just right. Dumb luck, or whatever. The eight-term Republican congressman had just been knocked out in the primary in 2008. So they had a very conservative Republican and a very conservative Democrat squaring off in an open seat. So all of a sudden, I was the third candidate, and I got a lot of attention that I really didn't expect. I was surprised the newspapers on the shore were very good about printing all the editorial letters I wrote and sending reporters to interview. I wound up in two televised interviews, got a lot of publicity for the party that way. I knew I wasn't going to be able to compete raising money. My two opponents, I think, spent a little over $2 million each in that election. So I made it a point that I wasn't going to raise any money. I would pay my own gas to my events, and you know, I wasn't going to be for sale to any contributors. And it got a lot of attention, and it made for a real interesting campaign because the two big party candidates spent so much time sniping at each other that I think a lot of the attention I got was being able to just stay on the issues. The first debate was in Salisbury, and the big article in the Salisbury paper after the debate was how much, the whole article was about how the Republican and the Democrat had spent the whole time sniping at each other, but the headline for the article said Libertarian provides voice of reason for the debate, and they closed with a quote of mine. So we got a lot of attention there. And ultimately, the Republican won by something like 3,000 votes, and I got, I think, about 8,000. So 11 o'clock election night, I was getting calls from the Associated Press wanting my reaction to the results. And for a whole week afterward, while they were doing the recounts, I kept getting all these calls at my office from the AP wanting further comments. So we got a lot of publicity there. So next time around, the Democrat ultimately won that time, so the next time around it was the same two candidates and they ran me again. There was only one debate, I think, that time, and things obviously had changed. People had 2 years with President Obama, and so I think I got about 10,000 votes that time. I upped the total a little, but the Republican won by a major landslide. One of the side effects, though, was that I think it was my first debate in Salisbury in the first election that Muir Botha was there. And at that point, he was apparently inspired to get interested in the party and ran, I think, for city council in Salisbury first. And then by the time I had run two times and decided it was time to stop being a local crank, Muir was ready to step in, and he got more votes than I did. I don't know what's going to happen with the Eastern Shore now, but it was a couple of good runs. It was interesting. I don't know if I'd have the energy to do it again, but I promised my wife I wouldn't win if I did. I figure I better not press my luck. Thank you.
Mark Ramis.
Well, I had to make a promise I got to my law partners. I'm a lawyer in the Washington, D.C. area, which may be almost as unusual a place as the Eastern Shore, but in some ways more so. I had a similar call to the one Dr. Davis described in 2010 with Bob. He asked if I wanted to run. Of course, I said no, like any sensible person would. But he was fairly persuasive, and he convinced me that this is really what the Libertarian Party was formed to do, that we're here to change the conversation. We are here to educate, and we try and reach people at the one time every 2 years when most people will tolerate 20 or 30 minutes of political philosophy. And at that very narrow window that you have to be a candidate to hit. You can't hit it any other way. When people ask me about my experiences, I find that they're usually coming from one of three perspectives. One perspective, and I fear it may be the one in this room today, is how can we be more successful? And I'm really not the guy to tell you that. I got 1.3% of the vote in 2010. I managed to double that in 2012. I got up to 7,000 votes or something like that. I think I figured out that if I could continue to double my share every election, then four elections from now, I would have 43% of the vote, and I might win in a three-way race. But obviously, the gains are slow, but it's maybe encouraging that there's some gains. The second perspective that I think people have when they want to find out about the experience is, why would you do that? What's the point? What are you up to? And that's a question on which I have really strong feelings, and they're similar to the idea that Bob planted in my head when he talked to me back in 2010. There's a story about the passage of the Voting Rights Act, and it was, I believe the story goes, that it's Martin Luther King talking to LBJ, talking about the votes not being there for the Voting Rights Act, and I don't have it down exactly, but the idea is that if you walk around Washington, D.C., and you see all those people with their fingers in the air, that's how you know the congressmen. They're walking around with their fingers in the air because they want to figure out which way the wind is blowing. And a lot of people think the point of politics is to change the identities of the people who are walking around with their fingers in the air. And what Martin Luther King said to LBJ that day, he said, no, we're going to change the wind. And that, I think, is what we're doing. When I have not once gone to a campaign event where I've actually gotten to speak to people, where I haven't had someone come up to me afterwards and say, you know, thank you for doing this. I heard something tonight that I haven't heard before. I wish more people could hear this. Some of these people join the party, some of them don't. Some of those people will put a sign in their yard. Maybe they'll have a water cooler conversation with somebody at work the next day. That's how we change the wind. We ultimately get the government we deserve, and we have got to get people wanting different things than they get from the government today, or the government is not going to change. You're not going to sneak up on people. Now, I happen to think that one of our big challenges is to find people who hate politics, because those people, they're libertarians. The people who want you to leave them alone, they're our people. And we've got to find a way to sneak up on those people and get them to... And look, it's a tough task, because first you got to find them. I did some print advertising in my first campaign, and the woman said to me, well, what section do you want it to go in? And I was trying to have... It was a rally to help the politically homeless, and it was scheduled for right after the primaries. The primaries were in September that year. I wanted to hit the people who were disappointed in the primary results. Well, how do you find the politically homeless? What section of the newspaper do they read? Is it going to go in the sports section? Will anyone read it if it does? I mean, how do we target these people? And I think getting lots of different faces up, running for office, and rotating through a lot, and tapping different groups of friends, different social networks, different places of business, I think is really important for us to sort of spread the respectability of the libertarian message. So the third group of people that I mentioned are the people who want to know, gosh, that sounds interesting. What was that like? If you're one of those people, talk to Bob after this is over, all right? Thank you.
I have a question for each of you. What did you feel was the most effective thing you did to get the libertarian message out and the least effective? Starting with Mark, let's go that way.
Least effective is easier. Print advertising is terrible. I never got any... by print advertising, I mean taking out an ad in the newspaper. I never got anything out of that. And the way I know that is because I can measure hits on my website. I think if you're going to do a campaign at all, you have to have a decent... that's okay. A decent website, one that looks like it was professionally done, because it's just... that's the price of playing poker. I think if you have that, you look like you're a serious candidate. If you don't, you never will. If you do that, and then you measure the hits on your website, you can see when something that you do creates buzz and gets people interested in you, because you can see the hits on your website. You can see when you put about yard signs out. I know what area those went out in. Did I get more hits from that part of the state? Yes, I did. The other thing that I did this time that I thought was really useful was digital advertising.
I'm sorry, but if they're real libertarians, they would turn off JavaScript and you wouldn't be able to tell whether...
Yeah, well, you can't always tell. Yeah, that's right. A lot of libertarians are allergic to social networks, which is, you know, another handicap. But I did some digital advertising this time because I have a friend down the street who has a company that does this. So these are people who, he says to me, who are your voters? And I said, well, you know, anybody who's been on the Cato website, that, you know, we ought to go for those people. And I forget the descriptions I gave him, but I tried to describe, you know, magazines I thought the people might read and other websites they might visit. And so he started targeting banner ads that would go out to people. And, you know, my highest vote total was out in Carroll County in 2012. And there's, you know, it was redistricted. I don't know that area. I'd never been to most of those towns. And there was no way I could drive to all of them. I was probably only in the county 3 or 4 times. And I think that the number of hits that I saw from that part of the state was huge. So I think that's something that we ought to, you know, try and get more heavily into in the future.
As far as the most successful things, the first was just plain dumb luck, being in a position where I could get into those televised debates. Because you're either going to get it or you aren't. And if you got it, there's no other way you can get that kind of publicity. I didn't do any advertising, but I made it a point to get in an editorial in all the, I got a list of all the local newspapers in the district and sent an editorial every month, and it got to be real art, because if it's 251 words, they won't print it. If it's 250, they will. So trying to say everything you want to say in 250 words and do it every month, it becomes a real art form. But I still get people asking me when I'm going to send more letters to the newspaper. So apparently there were actually people reading those editorials. As far as what I wasn't successful, I think worst thing is I'm probably 20 years too early. I don't think people are ready for the change yet, and that's one of the things that I've set out to find out is are people out there ready to change what we've got or not? And the answer is they aren't yet, but I'm more and more convinced that between them, the Republicans and the Democrats are going to screw up enough eventually that people are going to look at us to pick up the pieces, if there's any pieces left to pick up.
Probably the worst I did was spending good money on print ads.
I agree.
No good, really. But I lucked out a few times with radio interviews, and I know that I've picked up votes from the radio interviews. I think that my impact on the Sheila Katz show when I ran for city council president in 2011 probably was very helpful. It was a good show. She had a good audience, and they tend to be liberal, progressive, but the libertarian message can be presented so that people of that bent can listen to it. And when they see how much corruption is around, they will vote for you. I got all the Greens in Baltimore City voting for me for city council. You know? So, of course, we build a lot of goodwill there. Yes, sir.
Are you finished?
No, I'm not.
No.
I'm never finished. I tell you, a little over a year ago, I was at the hair cuttery up in White Marsh, and I'm waiting there to have my hair cut. I walked up, gave my name, I sat down, and all of a sudden, this guy's standing in front of me. He's about 6'8", sticks his hand in front of me. And he goes, Mr. Esslinger, thank you. Thank you for all your runs. Thank you for all your efforts. And if you look at the numbers, I'm usually the last. But I've won. I won. And so have we. But team effort. Every single time. It's like, to me, in 11, when we, by a judge's decision, we were able to get our ballot access back. And the first thing I had in my mind and in my heart, how can I not run? And I had the pleasure of going into the Baltimore City Voter Electoral Office and have them tell me that we were not on the ballot. And I said, well, you got your news wrong. What a pleasure that was. What a pleasure it was when I ran for city council one time and Nick D'Adamo, the man who said happy birthday to me, drove up to me and he says, Lorenzo, now I have to work. So it's not any one thing, really. It's really be there. Be there. Show off like Woody Allen. Yes?
First of all, I'd like to thank and congratulate you again because you've represented the Libertarian Party, of Maryland, with dignity, with class, with honor. And I'm very grateful for all that you've done. An observation, I think your point is probably correct about pen advertising. However, there's a certain thing that you should keep in mind, and that is sometimes if you don't do print advertising, perhaps people in the media won't take you seriously, so perhaps it should be considered something of a lost leader. The question that I would ask, and I'll preface this by saying, in Virginia, assuming that we can dragoon people into running for office, and we actually should have a pretty goodly number of people running this year, one of the phenomena that we've observed is people will run. Frequently, there'll be new people. They'll get active, they'll run once. We never see them again. And I suspect that, to a large extent, their expectations were not, they were much too high. When you entered your races, what were your expectations? How did you define victory?
I'll take it. Every single time I've run, I've always run with the idea that it may end up being only an educational campaign in the end, but I'm running to serve. I am running to serve, and I've done that every single time. Disappointment? Oh, God, Jeez. Are you kidding? huge. But then over time, you start seeing that, like what I just said, you are actually winning because you're there. Because there are those people who haven't given up on voting who want somebody like you. Or they trust you, like the Greens who vote for me. They don't agree with my policies, or my solutions, I should say. But they vote for me. I've helped them. They've helped me. And we have a huge common enemy. So my expectations gradually met the reality. And I just went on.
When Bob called me, all he was really asking me to do was be a paper candidate because he wanted to have candidates in all the districts in Maryland. And I figured, well, if I'm going to run, I'll give it the best shot I can. I'm not going to sink huge amounts of time and money into it, but I'll do what I can to get some attention. I told my wife, if I win, I will have to consider it an act of God, in which case I'm obligated to serve, because there's no other way I'm going to win. Having seen a little of C-SPAN lately, I'm glad I didn't win. I don't think I could stand to be there very long. But, no, I was pleased. Well, as I said, I fell into a string of dumb luck. I mean, I was petrified the first televised debate, but it was done by a group out of Salisbury that organizes that kind of forum and things, and they gave me a DVD copy of the debate. And I took it home, and I watched it, and I looked at it, and I said, you know, I didn't think I was doing very well, but I didn't do any worse than the Democrat was a professional prosecutor. I mean, this guy stands up in front of a jury for a living, and I didn't look so bad next to the two of them. And I thought, well, hey, I can maybe do this. And that was a great boost, was just getting a look at what it actually looked like to be alongside of those two up there. That, you know, there isn't any big trick to it. And after a couple of those events, you get so used to hearing them re-loop their programmed responses. I didn't do any prep at all for the debate. I mean, I know what I believe in. I've studied a lot of history, and I just, you know, I'll answer the questions as best I can. And the best responses I got were if I had 2 minutes to speak and I spoke for a minute and a half and said, that's all I have to say. Move on. Where I noticed that the pros, you know, it's like they can't go less than 20 seconds over on their allotted time in a debate. They just can't stand it, and they usually got to go back to the previous question. The times that I just said, you know, that's all I got to say, move on, I think the audience responded very well to that, rather than just rehashing of the old question or, you know, what did he do in his previous life? So I exceeded my expectation the first time. I only got the one debate opportunity the second time, but I picked up another couple thousand votes, 20% jump or so, I guess, from where I'd been. And I had some. I inspired somebody apparently that I could pass it on to and let him run the next time. And he did better than I did. If we can keep building on that, if nothing else, we'll get enough attention. Like I said, they'll be looking to us to pick up the pieces.
One of my real weaknesses as a candidate is that I talk too long. But you're putting your finger right on, you know, for me at least, the issue of money, which is kind of what came up in my conversation with Bob. So I didn't want to run primarily because I didn't want to fill out any disclosure forms or anything. I didn't want any part of all that. I didn't want my life opened up. Bob said, "Oh, you don't have to worry about that unless you're going to raise, unless you're going to raise or spend $5,000." You don't even have to fill those forms out for a federal raise. And I said, well, can you run a campaign without raising or spending $5,000? I said, sure, yeah, you get some bumper stickers, you get some T-shirts. And I said, well, does that work? I mean, and he said, well, you know, it works well. And again, I had a paper candidate and so forth. Bob just wanted somebody in the 8th district. All right. Well, then I said to Bob, well, you know, I got a lot of friends. What would the difference be between an under $5,000 campaign and an over $20,000 campaign? Or what would the difference be between that and maybe a $50,000 campaign? And Bob's answer was, I don't know. We've never had a $20,000 campaign. So the answer one on expectations is mine were low, but I wouldn't have done it if I didn't think that I could have done a better job as a congressman than Chris Van Hollen. Right, I wouldn't run for an office. I didn't think I could do the job. I just wouldn't do that. So then I sent out this email to all my friends, and I said, look, I'm not going to raise money. I'm not going to ask any of you guys for money. But this is what I'm doing. I want my friends to know what I'm doing. And I think many of you will believe in it. And if you believe in it and you want to help and you want to come along for the ride, here's a PayPal site. You can go to PayPal and you can send some money. And I promise you, whatever I get, I will spend it to make sure this message goes as far as it can and that it reaches as many people as possible. And within a week, I had two former clients send me checks for $2,300 each, which was the maximum under federal law. And at that point, now this non-disclosure thing was over, and I didn't feel that I could mail it in. So at that point, then, I felt like I had to run as hard as humanly possible because of the trust that people had placed in me. These people who raise $1 million, and I don't know how they do it. That is a different kind of person than I am. I could not take that kind of money for a campaign. I couldn't do it. Yeah. Yeah, she's saying, does it count if somebody else buys campaign materials and things like that for you? Yeah, there are complicated rules. I only know the FEC rules. I don't know the state rules, but yeah, there are complicated rules on independent expenditures, and they're attributable to the campaign unless you disclaim them and so forth.
But if you were to run, unless you raise or spend $5,000, you do not have to report to the FEC. Now, Scott did because he said a lot of major newspapers will not give you any traction unless you do file. So Scott had filed, but he hadn't really filed.
Right, and for a while, both in the New York Times and Washington Post had Mark and I on their campaign map. And then the New York Times took us off.
Right.
You know,
if you're directly advocating the election of a federal candidate, then I think there might be a way that I can say, well, she doesn't speak for me, and that doesn't count for me. But unless I take that affirmative step, then it's attributable to me, and it's got to be reported.
The weirdest thing in the last election the only advertising that I had was a bunch of 8.5 by 11 glossy two-sided flyers that came out from the Democratic National Campaign Committee saying that I was reasonable but my Republican candidate was extreme. And I never got one. The people were sending these to me. I was getting calls from the Tea Party complaining about these ads that I'm putting out arguing against the Republicans. Not my ads. There's Democratic National Campaign Committee on it. And the best one was another dentist sent me one that he'd gotten, and they took the picture of Washington crossing the Delaware, standing up in the boat, and photoshopped me into Washington. I would never presume to compare myself to the Democratic Party. Sent that out.
Yeah, as a consequence of your learning experience with the campaign, would you do anything differently with the campaign?
I wouldn't. Like I said, I figured I was putting all the time and money I could into it. And I just tried to make it a virtue of not raising the money because I made the point. The Eastern Shore unemployment is 10-12% in Dorchester County. And I said, my opponents are spending $2 million apiece. What else could you do on the Eastern Shore with $4 million that would be more valuable than yard signs and bumper stickers? And that got a lot of response.
You asked that question for the three? Okay. I, under the circumstances that I faced, and I look back on it, and I say, what would you have done differently? I don't think I would have done anything differently. I am very blessed and fortunate that I was able to do what I could do. Leo Domowski asked me some months ago, but when he was running against Dutch Ruppersberger, what had I said to Ruppersberger, because he didn't want to debate him. And I had the pleasure and the honor of publicly challenging Ruppersberger on the Patriot Act. And to me, that was a triumph when I was able to say any member of Congress who supports the Patriot Act is committing an act of treason against the American people. And I said it right there on a forum, open forum, got filmed, you know. Perfect? Heck no. I often wished that somebody better than me were running. But I can't change me.
I would, there's some things, I wouldn't spend the money on print advertising again. I think in general, I would try and reallocate some of the money that I spent toward reusable materials. Because there's so many things that every candidate needs. The website. It's silly to me that there's not a template for a candidate website somewhere in this country that some Libertarian Party organization makes available to its candidates. And I found none. You know, once you make one of these things, you do it over and over and over again. And it just doesn't cost that much to come up with and you know, type in the name. So there's stuff like that where I think we really could make it a lot easier for all of the Libertarian candidates to look very professional. If I could take the print advertising money that I spent with the Washington Examiner and reallocate it, you know, to that, that'd be a great switch.
How many organizations
did
you have
their
questionnaires from?
Yeah.
Well,
no idea. A lot.
Yeah, I have to go with them. I made it a point of answering everything.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I had very good results also from individuals who, because of our website, were sending me questions. And I was able to talk to them on the phone, and I was able to actually get people to vote for me. Because of that, when I ran for Congress, as well as when I ran for city council president, and I've never shied away from anybody. An environmental group wants to talk to me, I go talk to them. I don't say, well, you know, they're crazy, 300. I don't do that. You know, I care about the environment too. I just go about it differently. So tons of them. I mean, really. I don't know how many. I have not millions and billions and billions. I don't know. But it was a ton.
One thing I would add to that answer, and this would get back to Mark's reusable part. Once you run the first time, you save your answers, okay?
Oh, you do.
And then you can recycle them.
You do.
You put a lot of work the first time in particularly boiling it down to whatever the limit is.
Yeah.
As little as 20 words.
Right along the lines of that. Every time I answered questions from a constituent, and I treat them as a constituent, even though I'm not elected, once I answer a question like that, I incorporated my answer into my stance position in the website, because often were questions that I hadn't thought of, or they were phrased in a way that I hadn't thought of, so I added on. And of course, after that, you got a body of positions that you can address almost any time. You don't, like you said, you don't really have to prepare.
Yeah.
You know what you're thinking. So, you're not like the mayor of Baltimore and needs the Rolodex card, you know. Otherwise, you can't answer anything.
I answered almost all of them. There's one Hellenic group that is it's incredibly narrow, and they sent it to me both times I ran. And you know they wanted me to support a Truth and Reconciliation Commission about the Armenian genocide, and you know, and
I think I passed on that one too.
It's been 100 years.
That one was just so strange.
Yeah, and I don't want to do anything to say that I'm belittling the Armenian genocide. I simply don't know anything about it, and I wasn't going to research it to do this thing when, you know, you can search the web and find that they always have their picture taken with Chris Van Hollen. There was one I almost didn't fill out this year that Dean talked me into filling out. It was Clean Water Action. Where's Dean?
In the corner.
Oh, there he is. Dean, and I emailed Dean. I said, yeah, I'm a little surprised you're going to fill that one out. He said, yeah, well, it, you know, it's good. Let's engage with these people. So it ended up being one of my favorite questionnaire responses that I sent in. I think it was good to help me develop my thoughts on environmental thinking, and so I think it's very useful even when you think it's an away game. I wound up really liking the away games. But some of these things are not really questionnaires. Some of them are pledge cards, where they're just asking you, check the, you know, look at these 10 questions. You can see which one we obviously want you to answer. Please check the box. That's not educational. It's not helping the voters, and I would skip that stuff.
I'd like to argue them and point that out.
No, should have done that.
I've never shied away from saying to them, whoever it is, individual organization, I realize you probably will not like my answer, but here it is. I've never shied away from saying that. Never. At least they know you're honest. Okay? You don't try to make it sound like you agree with them. And you're right. There's some questions that are clearly saying, this is the one you have to answer in this way. You know.
Yeah. Any more questions?
On the topic of things that can help us cycle and marketing, you attributed getting youth at the base in the first place to Dr. Buck. I was wondering whether if we have certain organizations that always host the debate cycle after cycle, do we do anything to maintain a relationship with them to see that we might get in the debate to follow?
The League of Women Voters sponsors a good number of them, and I always made it a point to fill out their questionnaire in great detail and respond, you know, and they would usually call and ask if I would be willing to take part in the debate. Yes. The only one I missed was one that they gave me like a day's notice. It was 125 miles away and I couldn't take off work that short of notice.
In Baltimore City, I have participated in debates where there were more candidates than people there. And I'm talking about double or triple, okay? Double or triple. Also, in Baltimore City, and even when I ran for Congress, the League of Women Voters is not always honest. The last time I ran for Congress, they came up with some cockamamie idea as to why they were not sponsoring a debate that Mr. Ruppersberger would have had to be a part of. They said that they actually, in fact, was an indirect reference to the gerrymandering of the district, and they felt that they wasn't enough people or something in the particular area, whatever nonsense. And so I have found that, not to the extent that Maria Allwine the Green had to do it, but I actually had to find myself inviting myself to debate. I've been campaigning, walking down the street, and found a leaflet on the ground telling people to go to the city council candidate's debate, but I had never been invited. So I had to call them up and I said, hey, thanks for telling me nothing. I'm a candidate. And they've said yes. Sometimes they're very reluctant. I've seen Maria Allwine the Green be actually belittled publicly by people who organized the debate because they didn't want her there. was they knew she was going to let forget what its name was. It wasn't Curran. Who was it, Susan? She was running for city council president anyway, but she was going to it was actually Stephanie Rollins when she was still city council president. And they knew that she would let it happen, so they didn't want her around. They belittled her, insulted her, almost wanted to throw her out. You know, so it all depends where you are. It really depends where you are. I found that because of circumstances, what you have to do is to be very aware of whatever chance you got that moment. That's what you got to do. Be aware of whatever chance you got that moment, no matter what it is. Sometimes it doesn't look like much. Sometimes it does. You know, that's what you have. You have to be very attuned to that. Okay. That's what I wanted.
Last question.
I was going to say, I like the tactic that their Congressman Randy Harris did for the Democratic Party, trying not to have voted out of state, same time as he voted in Maryland. You guys ever thought about digging up some mud on your opponent?
That was a very.
Was it the right time to have withdrawal?
Mike,
you didn't dig that up.
No, he didn't. He didn't dig that up.
That got dug up because there was the federal lawsuit about the voting ID requirements in Florida, and they were looking for cases in Florida where there might have been voting, and one of the people found this, said, isn't that a name we've seen somewhere else? And lo and behold, the lady had voted in Florida and was running, and had voted in Maryland as well, and was running for the Congress in Maryland. It was random chance that they found it. Harris didn't dig that up.
No.
But it did give him an out, because when it dropped her out of the race, he said, well, he wasn't going to go to the last debate then, and that cost Muir the chance to debate him, because there wasn't a Democratic candidate anymore at that point.
Michael, the real dirt is their voting record. Okay? The real dirt is their voting record.
Barack Obama got everyone against, kicked off the first time he ran, kicked him off the ballot. So, you use the rules and kick him off the ballot. Why not? Play the same game.
I have to run a campaign. Why should I want to go through a legal battle to get people off the ballot? To me, that makes no sense. I mean, if it's something obvious like what happened in your case with that woman happens, it happens. And you take advantage of it if you can. But you trying to go after digging dirt, that's...
I was actually braced for the reverse. I'm a lawyer. I represent people who are accused of bad things sometimes. And I was waiting for that to come out. And if I'd ever registered, it would have, I think. But I didn't... I wasn't effective. It wasn't in anyone's interest to get into a fight with me. But, you know, there was the Republican running in the 8th District in 2012 was an absolute nut job on the Middle East. Couldn't wait to bomb Iran. Well, the Islamic Republic of Iran is a client of mine. You know, they get the benefit of U.S. law, too. And sometimes they have legal matters, and I don't represent them. I don't do the work. My law firm does. My name's all over their court papers and that. So I was waiting for stuff like that to come back. And I think that's... That would be, if I thought that I was actually going to be making a three-way race, I'd be a lot more worried about that than I am.
Okay, let's give the gentleman a big hand.
Just a brief announcement. Dean, if you'd be so kind as to let other people look at that little DVD of what a young man from Howard County High School did. He had a project, a political project, and he actually made a whole clip, and it's very interesting. He presented himself as a candidate. He gave himself a name. He called himself Sam Paul, and he had me as a spokesperson for his campaign. It's an interesting clip. I hope he can make it today. I invited him. He's a really cool kid. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.